Hello, and welcome to MetalDisciple.com's Metalheads Podcast. My name is George.
And I'm Buke.
And we are back for a second week in a row.
Look at that. We're on and roll now.
I feel like we just finished the last one.
We did.
Oh, yeah.
And we're back again. People are going to be downloading both of these now within days of each other. And
no, they'll probably be like three or four more of them before they realize we're back. Anyway, so I was in the car the other day, listening to the radio, Liquid Metal. And Quarter of Covers came on again. I always seem to be in the car at that time.
Friday, right?
Might have been. Might have been Thursday.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it was Thursday. And I was listening to the Machine Head cover of The Sentinel. And I got thinking about it. And when we've talked about covers in the past, you've said how covers don't really do anything for you. You're like, nah, you know.
Yeah.
And to a point, I agree. But I got thinking about the real point of doing a cover song. It's not that you think you're going to make a better version. It's to pay tribute to the song. Because I started thinking about cover songs when I was a kid growing up. Things like Megadeth's Anarchy in the UK.
Okay.
Is it better than the Sex Pistols version? No. But what did it do? It turned me onto the Sex Pistols. Therein lies the real point of cover songs to me, is to introduce your fans to music that you liked that they might not know about. And at that point, when I realized that, I was like, well, that's really what you're doing. You're not trying to say, hey, look, I can do this song better. You're trying to turn on your fans to music that you liked.
I don't know. I look at it differently. I don't know if they're trying to turn fans onto it. I think they're kind of, you're like a nod of the cap. This is a band that we like.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, but, you know, whether the band intends it that way.
I see what you're saying.
That's the way I always looked at it when I was a kid. You know, when I liked Metallica and Megadeth and those guys, that's how I got into punk music. Because I was, you know, back then, Metallica liked the Misfits. So then I got into the Misfits. Dave liked the Sex Pistols. I got into the Sex Pistols. And that's just how I found a lot of music that I wouldn't have normally heard about, was by listening to the stuff that the bands that I liked covered. Or, you know, the shirts they wore and the stickers they put on their guitars and things like that. So, yeah, I was just thinking about it and I thought it was kind of cool. Thought I would mention that.
Now, when you like your cover songs, do you like the band style to stand out in the cover song you're hearing? For example, I, as you just said, I'm not a big fan of the cover song, but Metallica, you just mentioned them. When they do their Merciful Fate medley, I love that cover.
Anything that Metallica covers comes out good.
Their Dio cover
is
great.
Yeah, they cover stuff very well. I heard one of the other songs on that Quarter of Covers was Ministry covering The Doors. And I was like, that was a waste. You know?
Amorphis also covered them, Light My Fire.
Really?
On one of their early albums. And that was this. You know, I kind of like also when you take two opposite genres, like a heavy death metal band covering something like that. It's funny. But yeah, I never go out and seek a cover song.
Yeah. No, I don't either. Sometimes you get them on B-sides.
And then you see even bands release whole cover albums. I don't even really...
I don't see the point of that.
Yeah, I don't see that point
That's
either.
That's just like got free time and, you know, nothing better to do.
Well, it comes right to mind. Iced Earth. Didn't they release that?
Yeah.
The whole cover album?
Yeah, what was that called?
I can't even think of it right now.
Horror Show or something like that?
No, Horror Show was the one where they did... It could have been Horror Show.
No, you're right.
But Horror Show was the one that they did, like Dracula had a song.
Yeah.
Frankenstein.
What was that?
That's we got to find. Look it up now. But I think Hatebreed did a cover album a couple years back.
Yeah, no, I like it when it's just sort of an extra bit, you know. Machine Head did it that way, you know, some bonus tracks. Metallica does it that way with bonus tracks. It's just kind of a fun thing, you know. It's like, it's not part of the album. You don't have to really take it seriously. It's just kind of cool.
The Iced Earth that we couldn't think of. Tribute to the Gods.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. A whole tribute album.
It almost kind of seems like you're just trying to cover yourselves. But hey, okay, we released an album.
Well, yeah, it could be something to get out of a record label obligation or something. Because you're not making dick for money on a tribute album, because all the royalties go to the people who wrote the songs.
Yeah, that's what I was about to ask. When a band covers a song, does the original artist get money for it?
Yeah, that's how that works. So, yeah. Anyway, it was just interesting. Thought I would mention it.
Of course.
So how's your record buying going these days?
slowed down because
of the baby.
Because of the baby, diapers and formula and stuff like that. And because there's nothing left.
Yeah. Well,
in person.
Yeah, I don't get to the store much anymore because they really don't have anything that I'm looking for anymore. I've filled in so many of the gaps in my collection that I really have to go online to find what I want. And you know, I tend to go to eBay and Discogs, to the record label websites and things like that. I found a cool site called Soundstage Direct. They have a lot of metal stuff, and they do pre-orders and things like that. I just got two Gorefest albums, Celestial Season album, and The Obituary, Slowly We Rot. But what I found the other day is that Amazon has a lot of good metal vinyl pre-orders. And I went a little crazy this past week. First of all, Amazon's prices are pretty decent. They're comparable to anywhere I found online in terms of, you know, it's much cheaper than going to eBay or even Discogs. And because I have Prime, I get free shipping, which, you know, shipping with vinyl is always expensive.
Yeah.
So within the last week, I've pre-ordered Thurgothan, Stream from the Heavens.
That's an older album.
It's very old. It's like an early Funeral Doom album. Mm-hmm. My Dying Bride's The Dreadful Hours, Iron Maiden's Number of the Beast, two Diabolical Masquerade albums, which that just blows my mind because I don't know if you're familiar with Diabolical Masquerade. It was a project done by Blackheim, a.k.a. Anders, from Bloodbath in Catatonia. Mm-hmm. And it was a little black metal project he did in the 90s. It's really cool. They put out technically four albums, but three real albums and one soundtrack. Raven Dusk in My Heart was the first one. I've got that one on vinyl. And I just pre-ordered the other two, The Phantom Lodge and Nightwork.
Nightwork's the one that sticks out. That's the cover that's like that church made of bones or something like that, or a cathedral.
Yeah.
Something made of bones, right?
I think it was just the inside of a cathedral.
But that's it. Yep.
Yeah, those are great albums. So I'm like really stoked to get those on vinyl. I also pre-ordered the new Ghost Brigade album, the new Exodus album, and the first Joey Ramone solo album. All for really good prices.
Are these directly from Amazon, fulfilled by them?
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah. So if you're looking for something, particularly pre-orders, oh my God. And that leads me to all these Iron Maiden reissues.
Mm-hmm.
I already have most of those. Number of the Beast, obviously, I didn't have. Have you seen they're putting out all those singles? 19 different 7-inch singles. When I saw that, I was like, oh my God, I want that. But I'm like, forget it. I mean, it's at $8 a pop. That's just insane. But when I was doing my notes earlier, I was like, well, $19 times doing the math. I'm like, that's not so bad. It kind of hurts right now. But they've split it up over three different dates. They're releasing seven of them mid-October, six of them end of October, six of them in November. So
did you order that?
I pre-ordered the first seven.
Oh man,
that only came to like $50.
Yeah, but everything else was going to start hitting.
Yeah, but you know what got me is that Iron Maiden backs all their singles with unreleased tracks. So there's just a multitude of B-side songs that you're not going to get anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
And while I have like the MP3s of them, to get these on vinyl with all that awesome cover artwork.
Was that what you sent me the other day? With the tail gunner?
No, that was the No Prayer for the Dying. It was a version from Russia. I had to go to Russia to get a copy of No Prayer for the Dying on vinyl. And that was an alternate cover.
That cover is sick.
Yeah, they have the tail gunner image on the cover in Russia. So I was like, yeah, you know, once they come out, they're going to be like $20 a piece everywhere. So breaking it up into three different sections, all right, fine. If it was like they all came out at once, there's no way I could have done that.
See, George, while he's one of my best friends, he is my vinyl for Seinfeld fans out there, because I had this moment a couple weeks back. He's my vinyl Newman. Because I attempt to go in my local record store a couple weeks back, I'm sorry. My wife and I round the corner, and out walks, as everybody else, I don't want to see coming out of that store with a bag in his hand. George walks out. And I was like, George. He's like, Buke. Because I know if there's anything good,
it's not there anymore.
It's not there anymore. So it makes me upset because I have a baby right now. You know, my wife's not working. Don't have extra funds right now to drop on records and you know, I know you're buying all these awesome vinyls. I'm sitting here.
Well, I really can't afford to do that right now. But like I said, the fact that it's broken up over three, I was originally planning to come in here and tell you that I couldn't just pick one or two and get them, because that's the kind of vinyl junkie that I am. I'm like, well, if I buy one, I have to buy all 19. I can't just buy one. You know, I can't buy. I was like, well, I'm going to get the Trooper one. And
no, you know what I thought you were going to tell me is what I texted you yesterday when Discogs alerted me to the Bloodbath of Resurrection Through Carnage that somebody was selling. I thought you were going to be like, oh, that's nice.
By the way, I just bought it for me.
Yeah, exactly. You scurry away and buy it. That would be a great. Because, you know, I have some of my favorite albums. Because on Discogs, any vinyl collectors out there, you can make a want list. Yeah, and if anytime a seller puts it on sale, it alerts you. And that's one of my albums I have on there.
Yep. Yeah, no, believe me, it crossed my mind. I was looking at it going, but it's coming from Finland.
Yeah.
And
it's easily over $100, too.
Yeah. Yeah. It was like, I think it was like $100 just for the vinyl, plus probably at least another 30 or 40.
You know what Amazon's also good for, too, going back to them, is the local stores around here sold out of the Mastodon vinyl. So I went on Amazon to buy it. And have you ever purchased from the Amazon sellers?
Yeah.
Yeah. They're great. They just use Amazon as a storefront.
Sure.
There's this one, Rareware Imports or something like that, from England.
Okay.
I had it within 5 days.
Nice.
So, and it was like $20.
Right on.
It's just, Amazon amazes me that in these big warehouses that I know they have, is just a little box of, you know, they have to have it, Diabolical Masquerade vinyls is just sitting.
Yeah.
And taking up a little shelf space all by itself.
Yeah, I just got the first Celestial Seasons album from a guy in England. Why do you guys get all the good stuff? None of the good stuff comes here. It's all imported.
Now, quickly, you just mentioned about the Maiden reissues.
Mm-hmm.
Before I had my record player, I remember I went to the record store one day, and I passed up Kill 'Em All. It was an original release. I didn't, you know, that's cool. Most recently, I went out and I bought the reissue of Kill 'Em All. Do you try and avoid reissues until you have the first print?
No.
Okay.
I mean, most of the stuff I'm looking for, either it was never originally issued on vinyl when it first came out, and most of the, I mean, everything is getting reissued now. If I could find a copy of the original that's in really good shape, sure. Yeah, that would probably be my preference, but it's all about what's available.
Yeah, because I got a copy of Black Sabbath, and just the noise on it alone is like, ugh.
Yeah,
I should just buy that reissue.
Yeah, mine's like that too.
But because, you know, yeah, can I say, oh, I own the first pressing of this, but really, what difference does it make if you can't listen to it?
Exactly. Yeah, I know a lot of the diehards, they don't like the 180 gram and they don't like the new vinyl, but I'm not that much of a snob.
Neither am I.
My order from Soundstage Direct came with a little catalog thing, and they sell like turntables and all the stuff that goes with that, as well as records. And so I was like, all right, well, let me go to their site and just sort of peruse some of their stuff. And oh my God, $7,000 for a turntable? What the hell?
I've seen CD decks that cost that much.
I'm just like, you know, this thing better like do the dishes and like, you know, go make me some money or something. Because I don't understand why a turntable has to cost $7,000. And they had like all kinds of them that were like this expensive.
Yeah, the needles alone are worth more than our house.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm like, I've got a $100 Sony turntable.
Now, you say your vinyl buying around here is kind of slowed down. That's because you haven't gone with me to Soundgarden in Baltimore yet.
Yes, I do.
If you were to see the metal section there, you drop some money.
Yeah, well, maybe when I get some money.
if you know any online stores for Georgia or anybody else out there who, you know, is looking to buy vinyl, let us know on our Facebook or, you know, Twitter.
Yeah.
Send us an email.
Please. All right, we have another round of topics from Will this week. Did you come up with some stuff for that?
I did.
All right, well, the first question, I already know the answer to this, but Star Wars or Star Trek?
Star Wars.
Yeah.
I'm a junkie for Star Wars, without a doubt. I grew up on it, had all the cards, all the toys, all the books, had all the encyclopedias. I know Star Wars like the back of my hand, so I am a Star Wars junkie through and through.
Indeed you
are. I don't care if it's a reissue, the original movies, Star Wars.
Do you have it on Laserdisc?
No, I have like the 6 different VHS versions, like the THQ remaster. Yeah. I have everything.
Wow.
I'm not one of those people though who makes a big deal. Like the Geek Stuff podcast I listen to, they talk a lot about the theatrical releases coming on Blu-ray. They want those bad. A lot of Star Wars purists want those. I don't care. Anything I can get Star Wars.
I will concede that you know more about Star Wars than I do, but I have something that you will never have.
What's that?
My very first movie that I saw in the theater was Star Wars.
Yeah.
The original release.
Yeah. Mine was Episode 1. A Phantom Menace.
Yeah.
Which I saw 12 times in the theater.
Wow. Yeah. Well, me, I like both. You know, I'm a huge Star Trek fan. I probably saw Star Trek before seeing Star Wars because my parents and my grandparents, they used to watch
my grandmother
the original series. And so that was on when I was a kid. But Star Wars is my first love. Of the two, obviously Star Wars is my favorite. Hmm. But I'm still a big Star Trek fan. So, yeah, see, well, there's Star Trek. Yeah,
yeah, you guys can't see, obviously. But next to us, George has a rack of his DVDs. Is there a Star Trek you go to? Next Generation, Voyager, any of these you go to more than next?
Original.
Original,
yeah, the original series.
See, I don't even know where to jump in with Star Trek to even start to try and watch it.
They're all pretty, I mean, you can watch any of them. I mean, the original series is a good place to start.
What's your favorite movie of the originals?
Oh, gosh. Probably Khan.
I remember when I was young going to see the one with the whales with my grandma.
Yeah, that's number 4. That's my mom's favorite.
Yeah.
I saw Khan in the theater and I was like, whoa. Because I was pretty young, so it was a little intense. I was like, that's not your average Star Trek movie. Anyway, all right. What about your top 5 local bands?
I
couldn't come up with 5.
Couldn't come up with 5. To be honest, Will, I hate to say this. I'll come out and admit it. I probably do a disservice of a lot of local metal bands. I don't go to local metal shows.
Yeah, well, we just don't hear about them.
Yeah, we just don't hear about them.
I suppose we should spend some more time on DCHeavyMetal.com.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll be the first to admit, I have not. If it's not a national, international band, I've never gone. I'm not. There's probably some great hidden gems out there that George and I are missing.
I was just able to squeak out 5. I was going to do 3, and then I thought of a couple more.
Yeah, throw them out.
All right. First of all, obviously, A Sound of Thunder. Mm-hmm. That's number 1. These aren't in order, by the way.
I forgot King Giant.
King Giant is my 2nd one. Charm City Devils is my 3rd. Aries, and they're from Baltimore. And then, Pig Destroyer. They're obviously on a much larger scale, but they are from the D.C. area.
Dying Fetus is from this area, aren't they?
I don't know.
I think they're from Baltimore, if I'm correct.
Hmm.
Yeah, but, you know, I remember when we met Will, he mentioned Baracho, is it?
I haven't heard of
them. I've heard them talking about them, but... You know, you look at, what's it, Chris, who runs the DC Heavy Metal.
Yeah.
He's always at shows every week. And I know you and I could probably, you know, go to a different metal show a week.
Yeah. But we could learn a thing or two from him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not saying this is going to come off wrong. And I don't mean for it to sound like that. I don't have the patience to sit through a lot of junk metal.
Yeah.
To try and get to that one good band. You know what I'm saying? We usually sit through that at Empire all the time, but the headlining band was a band we wanted to see, but they would bring in 4 or 5 local support acts.
Yeah.
And this is just me talking. You can blast me if you want. Heavy metal, when it's done bad, it's bad. It's really bad. And at the time, this was when new metal was you know, starting to come up, and there was just so many bad local metal bands we had to sit through.
Yeah. For me, I don't want to learn about a band live. I want to hear the recorded output first and then go see them live. That's the order that I do things in.
Hmm. Great point.
I mean, we heard Iris Divine. I assume they're local.
Yes. Yeah.
But it was not a great representation of who they were. It did pique my interest enough to go, okay, I want to go and see what they sound like. But for the most part, if I don't know a band and I'm seeing them live, I'm probably not giving them my full attention because, you know, unless like Iris Divine, they do something that like pulls my attention in. So,
but has there ever been, even back home in Michigan, was there ever a local band you saw that blew you away that you were a fan of and you just followed them?
When I lived in Michigan, it wasn't as easy to see shows. I wasn't close enough to Detroit for going to shows to be easy.
Mm-hmm.
And so I only went to Detroit for shows when it was like something big. Mm-hmm. So there wasn't really any like local metal bar to go to just see small bands.
Yeah.
I did see Omen once play at the Blind Pig, which was just completely bizarre to see them in Ann Arbor. But other than that, yeah, in Michigan wasn't real easy.
I'll just, you know, piggyback on your one point you made. As I'm thinking about it, you were just talking there, is that not saying these bands are putting out good stuff, and I guess maybe as metalheads we should want the noise and the, you know, the live experience, but the sound with the live venues around here, Empire alone, is like you are literally standing in a giant subwoofer. If you don't know the lyrics for even the headlining artist,
forget it.
Forget it. You can't make out anything.
Yeah.
So a lot of these bands, they don't stick with you because they're not making an impression to start with.
Yeah.
Even when we saw Warbringer at Landmine Marathon at Cafe
611
here, the opening acts, them, you know, didn't stand out to me. Not that they're doing anything bad. It's just that the sound is just...
Yeah. Heavy metal is so loud. It's just not... The live is just not the place to learn about it. I mean... I'm sort of flip-flopping here, because when I was in high school, I learned about a lot of bands by seeing the openers. You know, I learned about Sanctuary and Wrathchild America and, God, who knows, Warlock. All these bands, and I heard them because they were openers for the headliners. And so sometimes I would go to shows more for the openers instead of the headliners. Though frequently I would have the album before going to the show. It just happened to be that I liked the openers better. But sometimes I did learn about bands this way. But I think what you're saying about the sound quality does play into it a lot. It's like, there's so many bands, and the sound is so mediocre at best. It's just hard to get into bands locally. But for me, honestly, I think the biggest thing is I just am not aware of them.
Yeah.
All right, well, what about your gateway into metal? What was your gateway into metal? Say me.
Twofold. But I was a sophomore. I told us on, I think, episode one, that I love sharing it, so I'll tell it again. 2000, with my friend Morgan, he said, "Buke, you're too much of a pussy, and you don't listen to music," which I really didn't at the time. He goes, "Come with me." So I got in the car with him. We went to Best Buy in Rockville to pick up Pantera, Reinventing the Steel. And I remember driving home, and either that album starts with Hellbound or Goddamn Electric. And I remember the crushing dime guitars, and it was instantly like, Like when a dog hears an interesting sound, they kind of, like a high-pitched sound, they kind of cocked their head out of 45. I was like, So that was that gateway there. And then met George through my friend Matt, when his local band, which you heard some of his singing on the Sons of Destiny. When George was doing some work with Matt, George and I would hang out for hours at a time. Hours. And, you know, George, who had a collection of easily a couple thousand CDs, him and I would just burn entire discographies of artists. And we'd sit there and talk metal for hours. Hours. You know, my knowledge was even 1% of what it is now. I didn't know anything about bands. I knew Metallica, that was it. You know, I was some 17, 16-year-old kid, 18. George has opened my eyes to everything. Yeah, so literally in the grand scheme of things, this is only going back to 2000, 2001. Here I am, I'm 31 now. My metal knowledge is only going back, you know, not even half my lifetime, you know, when yours is decades now.
Yeah, just got my 30-year chip. Well, for me, my gateway to heavy metal was Columbia House Record and Tape Club. I'd listened to some other artists prior to that, but they were all kind of 80s pop rock. And then I filled out one of those, you know, get 12 CD, or not even CDs, 12 cassettes for a penny deals. And I picked up some AC/DC, some Black Sabbath, one with Dio, one with Ozzy, a Kiss album, and Twisted Sister. So that was pretty much how I got into heavy metal. And then from there, I read a lot of the early metal mags, Hit Parader, Circus, Rip, Metal Mania, bunch of those. And I would always pore over those looking for new music, the way I still do now with Metal Hammer and Terrorizer, those magazines. I'd look at the ads. I mean, that's how I discovered Metallica and Anthrax and Slayer, all of those. It was from, you know, reading the ads in these old 80s metal magazines. So that's how I got there. What are some of your biggest disappointments in metal?
You know, since I don't have the decades of metal like you do, a couple that stand out for me. I really got into the 2001 release from Dimmu Borgir, Death Cult Armageddon. That symphonic black metal sound that they had on that album blew me away. I listened to that album nonstop.
So how is that a disappointment?
The excitement was at a fever pitch for Dimmu for a couple years.
Yeah.
Then they released the album, Deathcore Armageddon came out in 2003. They re-released Stormblast, they re-recorded that. But then in 2007, where I'm like waiting for new Dimmu, they released that Insorte Diabli, whatever that is, that concept album.
Yeah.
Nothing special for me there. It just wasn't the same epic album that Death Cult was to me. And then they totally lost me on that Abrahadabra.
Really?
Did you listen to that much?
Yeah, I like it.
Again, nothing special for me.
Huh.
And
that's not a very big disappointment.
It's not. But probably the biggest one for me is I'm a huge 3 Inches of Blood fan. And when they released Advance and Vanquish, when you turned me on to that, hit me like a Mack truck of instant hooked on this album. And I was so, again, riding high on them. They released Fire Up the Blades, their follow-up to that. And I was like, man, these guys are still doing good. I'm loving the sound that they're making, the two vocalists. Everything's working great. And then they released, probably the biggest disappointment for me, is Here Waits Thy Doom in 2009. It was the first released on Century Media. And there was a one singer. You know, Cam was just taking the vocals by himself. And that sound that they had, to me, was gone.
Yeah.
So, not being really vested in bands for years and years and years. The Opeth one, their most recent one, Pale Communion. On first listen, going down to the barbecue was a big disappointment. But taking a step back, listening to it again on vinyl a couple times now, I'm coming around on it.
I can easily say that the new Opeth is an extremely good album, because it is. But it's not an album I like. You done?
Yeah, those are my disappointments.
All right. Well, I've got an actual list of 5 disappointments.
So, well, I know I don't have the years that George does. So, his is what I'm actually really eager to hear.
It's not all that interesting, but number one on this list, I'm surprised you didn't say this one. Saint Anger. Enough said.
Oh, that was a given. I'm sorry. Yeah, that was a given.
Yeah, Saint Anger. You could go Lulu too if you want, but I'm gonna give him that one. Another one. This one's, I don't know. When I saw White Zombie live in the late 90s, I was a big White Zombie fan, and Rob Zombie was absolutely horrible. Could not sing, and was not singing in time with the music. It was this huge buildup. I mean, they had this awesome-looking stage show, and it was like, yeah, this is going to be great. Wait, what?
What am I just witnessing?
And it was fucking horrible. So that was a huge disappointment, but not a big deal in the scheme of things. It's just one show. Celtic Frost's Cold Lake album.
I saw this.
And the Cherry Orchards video.
This was about face, wasn't it?
That was a bad idea. But hey, look where we are now.
But
we got Triptychon.
Does history ever let them live that down?
No.
No?
No. And I expect he gets pretty cranky if you bring it up, so. Next up is, this isn't really a disappointment, it's just more of a bummer, was when Sentenced broke up.
Yes.
That was crushing. And, you know, I was thinking about this earlier, and I wonder if Mika would still be alive if the band had stayed together. You know, Sentenced breaking up, did that free him up to do nothing but sit around and drink himself to death? I don't know. If there'd been a band, he might still be here. Something to think about. And finally, we have an era. Iron Maiden's Blaze Bailey years. Total disappointment. That was probably like the biggest metal bummer ever.
How about Slayer in the mid 90s?
What about it?
Divine Intervention and Diablos in Musica, wherever that is.
Diablos in Musica is one of my favorite Slayer albums.
Wow.
And Divine Intervention's pretty cool too.
Hmm.
I don't know what people are complaining about.
Hmm.
I'm a Slayer fan, not like a Slayer like Fairweather fan. I like Slayer.
Hmm.
Enough said.
Hmm. Okay. I would have thought those were a major list, one of those two.
Why? What's wrong with Diablos?
Because it was just a major change for them.
I thought Diablos and Musica was sort of heading back. I mean, it had more groove to it, I thought. And I liked that, you know. Divine Intervention was very sterile sounding. I mean, I can understand why it would be someone's maybe least favorite Slayer album, but there's still some really cool songs on there. And I saw them on that tour, so I was very happy with it.
Hmm.
So why don't we get into some news? Have you heard the new Machine Head song, Now We Die?
It hooked me instantly.
Yeah. They put out that little EP thing with the Record Store Day thing. I heard some songs off there, was not real, like, wild about them.
But remember, those were demo tracks.
They were demo tracks, yep. I heard this song and I was like, this is what I'm talking about. Yeah, that's some good shit.
This to me sounds like it skips the locust sound and almost goes back to the blackening.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I felt like it was an extension of the locust sound.
I could hear that too, but it was great. It's more, if I ask, you know, how you describe Machine Head the past couple of years, the word that comes to mind is evolve.
Yes.
They've evolved into a real heavy metal band from the songwriting standpoint, writing very dynamic, flowing songs from, you know, for a while, man, they were a new metal band.
Yeah.
They're writing some killer songs now.
Yeah, I am now excited again to hear the new album. Mm-hmm.
It's you saw the news. Did you also see about this leaking online? That's why they had to put this out?
The song leaked?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Rob, on the band's Facebook the other day, said that he's at home. One of his friends says, dude, I heard your new single. And he's like, what?
What new single?
Yeah. He's like, yeah, this song, Now We Die, or something. He's like, it's not supposed to be released for another 3 weeks. So
it's out there.
Yeah. So their way of taking the bull by the horns now is saying, hey, you know what? It's out there. We can't really do anything about it. This is the world that we live in now, music-wise. So let's just give it to them. So now you can, this was in the United Kingdom. Apparently, I don't know if it's our iTunes store as well, but I know you people in Europe on iTunes can go online and they can download. If they pre-order the album, they get 2 songs right now.
Nice.
So.
Right on.
But check it out. Cool. You know, there's a lot of bands do right now on YouTube. They have these lyric videos. Really cool lyric video.
Yeah, definitely. Another song I heard this week was Unite in Pain, the new Bloodbath song featuring Nick Holmes. What'd you think? Did you hear that?
Yes. Yes.
Pretty awesome.
Any questions or doubts? Out the window.
Out the window. Yeah, can't wait for that one.
Oh, man, that's going to be awesome. Did you see the pre-order for the vinyl?
No, I didn't.
Oh, man, they have vinyl pre-order packages already. It's like a nice silver vinyl. Oh, it's nice.
Keep talking. keep talking.
You can get, you know, you can get the vinyl. It comes with like a blood bag looking thing.
Yes. And I'm done.
It's nice. It's really cool. And the artwork for the album looks wicked.
I'm going to be looking for that as soon as we're done here. One more song. Have you heard the new At the Gates?
I have not.
They're streaming the At War with Reality title track. I'm not sure yet what to think. Obviously, it's been a very long time since At the Gates was together.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes sense that they don't sound the same. So I don't know. I think I'm going to have to hear the whole album before I really make a decision. I mean, it was cool. So I don't know. I guess we'll see.
Well, I know that they have a lot of fans eagerly waiting to see what they're going to do.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I pre-ordered that one on vinyl.
See, that's bad when you don't know.
When you don't remember. Well, it was a while ago. I was looking at it. I just don't remember if I actually pulled the trigger or not. So there's also this NOLA, Life, Death, and Heavy Blues from the Bayou on Noisy. Have you watched that yet?
I have.
Are those coming out like daily?
Weekly, daily, something like that, yeah.
Well, because I watched the first one, and then I noticed there was a second one, like, the next day. I haven't watched the second one yet, so I haven't actually gone back to look and see if there's any more of them yet. I know it was like a 5-part series, or?
No, it's like four. It's a 4 or 5-part series, if I'm correct.
Okay. I should have looked that up, but watching the first episode was pretty cool. I mean, it was only like 15 minutes long. What'd you think?
Great documentary. Having me, teaching me more about the whole Southern metal scene.
Yeah, that's cool. They had Phil on there and Jimmy.
Mm-hmm.
Jimmy was on there. And was Pepper on there?
Kirk was there.
Kirk was there, definitely. I think they just talked about Pepper. Maybe they talked to him. What do I know? I just watched it once. But there's a bunch of episodes coming out, apparently, 4 or 5 of them or whatever. The first 2 are out that I know of. I have to go back and check, but definitely worth checking out. Singer Ronnie Monroe has quit Metal Church. Anybody care? No? No? Yeah. Let me form an equation for you. David Wayne equals Metal Church. Okay? 0 David Wayne equals no Metal Church. No David Wayne, I don't care. David Wayne is dead, therefore there is no Metal Church. I did like that one album, like the first one after David left. Blessing in Disguise, I think it was.
Okay.
It was a pretty cool album. But on the whole, no David Wayne, no Metal Church. So, no offense to Ronnie Monroe, but I don't think I've ever even heard him. So,
no.
Do I really have a leg to stand on? knocking something I haven't even heard. Nah, it's just the principle of it. No David Wayne, no metal church. The end. Did you hear about Jason Newsted quitting social media as he prepares to fade into obscurity?
It sounded like a social media stunt to get his name back out.
Jason Newsted is no longer famous, just like Shia LaBeouf.
You don't
he's
going to
put
is?
A bag on his... No, I'm kidding.
Oh.
That was Shia LaBeouf.
Yeah.
He said, I'm no longer famous. He got pissy and was quitting Hollywood or something, even though he's making movies still. So I don't know what he's insane.
Yeah, he is nuts.
But he said, I'm no longer famous. So I guess that's what Newsted's saying. I'm no longer famous. Nobody cares. No, actually, he probably thinks people do care. I care. I like Jason Newsted.
I love him.
But what the hell, dude? You know, getting rid of social media is pretty much like chopping yourself off at the knees.
Is he starting to turn into one Dave Mustaine going off the deep end?
I don't know, man. Could be cuckoo. He just has convictions. Speaking of Metallica, Some Kind of Monster is getting a 10-year anniversary 2-disc Blu-ray release. What the hell? I can't believe it's been 10 years already. Whew. Time flies, man. I saw that in the theater.
Did you?
I did. My wife and I went down to D.C. somewhere and watched it in some little artsy-fartsy theater.
Turnout good?
Yeah, you know, it was all right, probably.
We saw their last movie in the theater.
Yeah,
it was only a couple of us.
Yeah. No, I can't imagine it was, like, packed or anything, but, you know.
Now, would you go back and watch it again?
Yeah, I thought it was interesting.
Yeah.
I have Some Kind of Monster, the poster that they gave out, like, you know, movie posters at the movie, and I've got it framed in the bar. Ooh, which reminds me, I have to show you the Cathedral poster. It's framed and in there waiting to be hung.
Oh, nice.
Cannibal Corpse's new album, A Skeletal Domain, debuted at number 32 on the Billboard chart this past week.
Good for them.
That's awesome. Cannibal Corpse in the Billboard chart. Who would have ever thought?
Good for them.
It's cool in a way, but it also shows you just how badly the music industry is doing when a death metal band is at the number 32 spot on Billboard.
And that's probably from moving a couple thousand copies, if that.
Yeah, exactly. A Job for a Cowboy is getting ready to release their new album, Sun Eater, on November 11th.
Didn't that announcement seem like it came out of nowhere?
It was sort of like, wait, what? In November already?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
I wonder if anything's leaked yet that we can hear.
I tried. I didn't see anything.
No.
But yeah, it was just like on Twitter one day, somebody's like, hey, new Job for a Cowboy's coming out.
Well, I look forward to seeing what that sounds like. Hopefully it's cool. And finally, wrapping up the news, have you seen that video from the drummer from Decrepit Birth where he creates fart metal?
No, I saw it, but I didn't check it out.
Well, it was a slow news week, so I was like, let's just click on that. It was actually pretty funny. He's like playing drums and playing guitar and then he's like farting into a microphone. You know, it's all like pieced together with a bunch of different farts and it was funny. And then he gets to the end and he finishes drinking a big glass of milk and he's like, by the way, did I mention that I'm lactose intolerant? And then you see him on the can and he's like shitting. He's like naked with a guitar and he's shitting on the toilet and it's just this loud. It was disgusting. It was hilarious.
Probably getting a bunch of views.
Yeah, so you know, go up on YouTube and look up fart metal. Let's talk about a couple of new releases this week. First off is the new 1349, Massive Cauldron of Chaos. You probably haven't heard these guys, being that they're black metal.
I've heard of the name. I've seen pictures. I've not listened to it, no.
Well, these guys are pretty cool. They play, you know, basically an old school Norwegian black metal. The drummer, of course, is Frost of Satyricon fame. That's probably my biggest reason for checking them out. I have not yet listened to the new album, so I cannot make a judgment, but I will probably like it.
In the black metal world, how are these guys? Are they pretty good?
Yeah, I mean, I like them. You mean in terms of like their reputation?
Yeah,
or are they? I don't know. I don't know any other black metal fans personally. You know, you're pretty much my bounce things off of guy.
And black metal does just bounce off of me.
So yeah, I don't really have a gauge on what other people think of them, unless I was to go and like read Blabbermouth comments or something. See what the trolls have to say. Next one, I think you are eager to get your hands on. This is the Black Crown Initiate, The Wreckage of Stars.
This is what I've been listening to this week, actually, also.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm. It's a Opeth sound, similar type of band.
Have you been listening to the EP?
I have.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've got the album, and I'm undecided as yet as to what I think of them. I think I like them, though. I'm like, huh, it's so fast and technical that it almost borders on metalcore, and by definition, I hate metalcore. So, but I don't think it really is. It's just, I don't know. And then, like, there's clean vocals, and they're not too sappy, so I think I like them. I want to listen to it some more to decide, but I think I like them. Another one I know you haven't heard is the new Decapitated Blood Mantra. You should hear that one. That is killer.
Okay.
Definitely check that out. That's some sweet-ass technical death metal. And finally, we have the new Electric Wizard album, Time to Die. I agree. They should just die.
I can't get into them.
I've tried. I mean, I'd like what they're doing in terms of doom, but they... And even like a retro sound, fine, but their recordings are always just so shitty. I'm not that picky anymore in terms of sound quality, but it's really just kind of shitty. So, I don't know. I'm trying to get into them, but I only got a couple songs into this new album before I was like, no, not so much. All right, well, why don't we talk about a band that I am really happy about? This is a band I discovered recently from Phoenix, Arizona. This is our indie band this week. It says Take Over and Destroy, and their second album, Vacant Face. I don't remember where I first heard this, but I have since picked up the album. I ordered their first album, Endless Night, on vinyl the other day. In talking to the band, they assured me that Vacant Face is going to get a vinyl release soon, so I will be all over that. I'm not sure how to describe the sound. My initial impression was symphonic sludge. Sort of two opposite ends of the spectrum here. Is a very ethereal and epic sound to these songs. At least, well, some of them, not all of them are like that. But and the playing is very tight, but then the heavy just rams into you like a fucking Mack truck T-boning you. And the vocals are just so sludgy, raw. Yet at the same time, there's clean vocals. There's strange, gothic clean vocals. It's honestly, it's like nothing I've ever really quite heard before. It's pretty original sounding, and for somebody who's listened to as much music as I have, that's one quick way to get me on board, is something good that I haven't heard before.
Mm-hmm.
And I just played you the songs before we got started, and what was your impression?
You just described it perfectly, that it hits you first off. When it kicks in, you're like, whoa, what is this?
Yeah. The album starts off and real quiet. And then it gets into some, like, clean, plinky-plinky guitars, and you're like, oh, that's pleasant. And then it fucking just smacks you in the head. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, that's going to be good.
Again, another pick by you with right in tune with what I'm listening to right now, style-wise. So,
yeah.
You're on fire.
Before we play a song, I want to mention a few things about the band. First of all, you should check them out on Facebook, and then you should go buy their music. You can buy physical copies and merch from takeoverandestroy.bigcartel.com. If you want the digital download, head over to takeoverandestroy.bandcamp.com. These guys are going to be touring with Year of No Light starting October 30th, so make sure you get out there and check these guys out. Now listen to this song and you'll see why. You will understand. This is Take Over and Destroy, Vacant Face. All right, that was Take Over and Destroy and their song Vacant Face. Stick around to the end of the podcast and we'll be playing you another song from Take Over and Destroy. All right, so this week I had the epiphany, top three Opeth albums. I don't know how we hadn't done this yet, given your...
I'm a nice guy. I bend for my best friend.
You what?
I bend for you. I'll stay quiet over here and let you, you know, run everything.
Well, I've asked you before. I'm like, hey, what should we do top three? I mean, last week you chose Megadeth.
Because I know you like Opeth, but you're not like me. You're not fanatical. You don't have your unborn child in an Opeth onesie all the time like I do.
I do have all their albums on vinyl. Anyway, so...
You wanna let me borrow your still life?
You don't have still life?
No, that's the only one I don't have. Oh. And the live one.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, what are your top three Opeth albums?
This is like that moral conundrum. What's that story? Like, you know, you ever heard that story of between two parents in an argument, you know, cut the child in half, give them both, you know. This was rough. Look at me. I'm sweating right now trying to make this decision because this band to me.
I thought maybe you would be like, I can't do just top three. I have to do top five. Or
you know what? I'm going to do that right now. I'm going to hit you with my top five because I can't do just three. Okay? Number five, I'm going to start with Watershed.
Okay.
It was released in 2008. Killer album. A little on the softer side, but the tracks Heir Apparent, Lotus Eater, amazing, amazing songs. Then the softer Burden, great. Number four, this one's going to be a little bit of a stretch. This is their second release, Morning Rise. The thing I like about Morning Rise is it has the awesome songs, Night and Silent Water, the 20-minute Black Rose, Immortal, and To Bid You Farewell. Great.
Right
great
on.
Stuff. Number three, the album that got me into Opeth, Deliverance.
Okay.
That has Master's Apprentices, Deliverance, Killer, A Fair Judgment for Absent Friends. Man, this is tough. Number two is what a lot of people call the go-to Opeth album, like their top. You know, mm-hmm. This one has, they say, you know, when they list the best all-time albums of all time, this is on there, Blackwater Park.
Wow, you have surprised me.
Number two.
Yeah.
It's a great, great album. Obviously, you know, the reception that this album has alone speaks for itself, but... Starts out, Leper Affinity, Bleak, Harvest, Drapery Falls, Dirge for November, Funeral Portrait, Patterns in the Ivy, Blackwater Park, Leper Affinity. There's a bonus track live on it. Whew, amazing, amazing album. The album, if you've never heard that album and you're curious what Opeth sounds like, that's a great jumping in point.
I'm curious what your number one is now. I would have thought that was your number one.
I was going to go with Still Life, but I just like Godhead's Lament off that album and Serenity Painted Death, but... My number one Opeth, maybe this is a little more, it's not commercial at all, but it's probably their number one selling album so far, Ghost Reveries.
Huh, interesting.
Ghost of Perdition, Baying of the Hounds, Beneath the Mire, Atonement, Harlequin Forest, my favorite song on there. The reason I went with this one is the production is outstanding. Mike's vocals knocks it out of the frickin' park on this album. The band for me is just... hitting on all cylinders on this album. It's, oh man, it's their eighth album, released in 05. It was their first with Roadrunner.
All right then. Well, I forgot to pick mine until right before we started recording, so I didn't put a lot of thought into it. It was more of a gut reaction.
But that's more true.
Yeah, and I've only got three. So my number three is Orchid. Because I went back and listened to that again like a week ago. And I was just like, wow, you know, I'd forgotten how incredible that album was.
And how heavy they were when they started.
Mm-hmm. And so I'm like really into that right now. So
Forest of October. Mm.
So that's my number three. Number two is Still Life. I really have nothing to back that up other than it's a great album. And my number one, Blackwater Park.
The album speaks for itself.
Yeah. I remember when that came out, I hadn't really been listening to Opeth much anymore. I kept buying the albums when they came out. I was like, okay, Opeth, And then Blackwater Park came out, and I was like, okay, they've definitely stepped it up a notch here. And so that was sort of reintroducing me to the band again. So there you go. So last week, we started a new segment called Convincing Buke, and I stated the case for the band Motorhead, and I gave Buke homework to listen to three songs by the band, And now this week, he has to come back and tell us, did these songs make a fan out of him? Or does he still dislike Motorhead? I pass the mic to you.
You're going to hate me here. Don't throw anything at me. The word still that comes to mind, overrated.
And now on the final Metalheads podcast.
And Buke subsequently went missing after this podcast. You know what, buddy? What was that, 1916?
Mm-hmm.
Touching. The lyrics hit me.
Yeah.
Especially the lyrics when he looks over at his friend, you know, sees his friend dying. It's like, whoa, that song alone is great.
Yes, it is.
I thought on the way drive over here, how to best describe this. You know how Man of War prides himself on being loud?
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like in the recording of this album, they were trying to have a loud, heavy sound that I think goes along with Motorhead. But his vocals and how tuned up everything is kind of, it's hard to describe, kind of blends it all together. It's just where it's kind of like, it's not noise. It's not, you can't decipher different sounds. It's just cranked up a little high. And still, his voice, I love raspy voices. His voice just doesn't do it for me. I know his voice is, yeah, some people could say on the level of a Cadillo voice, you know, one for the ages.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't stand out to me. I did listen to other songs. You picked great songs.
Yeah.
You easily picked the best songs on the album. I listened to the album start to finish. You picked the best songs on the album.
Okay.
While this instantly doesn't hook me on the band. Has been wanting to check out other stuff, but still not enough to where if I don't listen to them, you know, for another couple months, it's not going to bother me.
Yeah, don't pull your punches. Call it what it is. You still don't like Motorhead.
Yeah, I still don't like them yet.
Got to say, I'm a little disappointed. I was not able to convince you.
Hey, but that's the fun thing about this segment now, because this is I've said it before in the podcast. It's my favorite part of our friendship. When you turn me on something that hooks me and it's become something that I become a fan of.
Guess I'll have to lob you a softball next time.
No, I don't want softballs. I want high, fast, inside.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I'll have to see what I can come up with for the next episode.
But hey, I did listen to him. Listen to him a couple times.
Okay. Well, good job. All right. Well, what are you listening to for fun this week?
May I just go back to that just for 1 second? If anybody out there is a fan of Motorhead and the playlist, if they think that, hey, maybe you've introduced your friends to Motorhead, or if there was a Motorhead track that turned you on to the band, you can also convince me. Say, hey, Buke, I'm on Twitter at OpethFan.
George is a dumbass. He didn't play you the right songs.
No. Help George.
Yes. I posted the songs on the Metal Disciple Facebook mm-hmm. page. So.
And there were comments we got on there. Yeah, it was cool.
Yeah. So if you want to, you know, follow along, listen to the songs, they're on the Facebook page.
Yep. Okay. What I'm listening to for fun this week, I'm listening to, and we didn't mention it on the new releases, our Welcome Back episode last week, is In Flames' 11th studio album, Siren Charms.
Yeah. What'd you think of that?
It's good. It's for a while there after Reroute to Remain and Soundtrack to the Apocalypse or whatever that was. They kind of lost me for a number of years with Come Clarity. Then in 2001, they released Sounds of Playground Fading, which was, hey, it's more heavier rhythmic sound from them. Definitely not their early Jester Ace Horacle type of sound that they don't have anymore.
No.
But this album is more of, I think, them finding their way again.
Yeah, I think it's pretty good.
Yeah.
I've seen some...
I've seen both sides of it.
Yeah, I've seen some haters hating, but me, for the most part, it's not bad, you know? It's pretty good. It's definitely better than their middle years, you know,
Would you still say In Flames is... Because remember when we saw them on the Reroute to Remain tour, they were getting big. They were huge.
Yeah.
The excitement, the hype of them, they were pretty big. Did you say that they still have that?
It's hard to say. I mean, I think they've maintained a certain level.
Mm-hmm.
But like any band who's been around as long as they have, like the Metallicas and stuff, by this point in their career... All the early fans are going to start calling bullshit on anything they do.
Mm-hmm. Good point.
And so they really got to just kind of do what they want to do at this point, because people are going to complain no matter what. There's no way to put out a perfect album that nobody's going to hate on. So I don't know. I'm sure they're still pretty popular.
How about next week? Let's do top three In Flames.
Okay. All right. Well, I've got two different albums I wanted to talk about this week. Two rather different albums. The first one is a Swedish death metal band called Crucifier. and their album Black Magic Fire. There's not a lot of new death metal these days that's real interesting. As I was mentioning last time, I was really getting into the old school death metal. But I heard this album, and I kind of, like you said, I did the dog with the sideways. The music is very kind of old school death metal sounding, whereas the vocals kind of have almost a black metal sound to them. And the contrast is really pretty cool. There's nothing super fancy about it. Like I said, it's kind of old school sounding, so it's like no bells and whistles, but it's a good recording and it sounds good. And I say, hey, check it out. The other band I was listening to this week, I don't even know how to classify this, pagan metal maybe. It's called The Wolves of Avalon, and their album, I'm not going to say this right, Boudica's Last Stand. Now, the main guy for this band has another band that you may or may not have heard of called the Meads of Asphodel. That's a black metal band, a rather controversial but well-received black metal band. The Wolves of Avalon, though, it's got sort of a medieval style. I don't want to say like battle or anything like that, but kind of. It's just kind of medieval sounding. There's a lot of folky elements. There's clean vocals. There's harsh vocals. It's really strange. That's really all I can say. It's kind of strange, but at the same time, it's kind of interesting. So I've been listening to that, trying to decide what I think.
Put it in my iPad right now. I'll be listening to that later.
Yeah, let me know what you think. All right, how about a classic for this week?
So as I was listening to the Opeth album this past week, I was thinking about the sound that Opeth has evolved into, and I started looking back through my collection on my computer of bands' albums and when they too made a change and their sound kind of evolved. And you could put your finger on the pulse and say, yep, right there. That's when the change occurred. This one was back in 1995. This was the album The Angel and the Dark River.
Ooh.
By My Dying Bride.
Yeah.
The albums before this, as you can probably back me up, were rather death metal. The vocals were growling, harsh vocals. And those of you who know the My Dying Bride now, very slow, very sad, very depressing vocal stylings. Sad, slow music. Violins, doomy, gloomy.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting is that, you know, they started off with death vocals. It was like really kind of, you know, early death doom.
Mm-hmm.
And then they moved on into all clean vocals. And now in the last, I don't know, 10 years, they've moved back to, I can't even remember when they started doing it again, but they've been doing harsh vocals mixed with clean vocals. And to me, that's just the best of both.
Yeah. So I thought this was interesting because this is one of those albums that you could look at the albums before and hear it and instantly put this one on and starts out and you're like, is this the same band?
Yeah.
It's, you know, maybe you can't think, I don't want to put you on the spot right now, but maybe for later, if you can think of bands that their style was almost a complete 180 from. But, you know, my Dying Bride, when you first turned me on to them, I was like, oh man, this is sad. Some sad stuff.
Yeah, that's doom.
it's definitely, but yes, that's my album. By My Dying Bride, The Angel and the Dark River.
Nice.
I thought that would be a nice pull for you.
Oh, I love that album.
Do you?
Oh yeah. I have it on vinyl.
Oh.
I guess that's my code for I love it. I have it on vinyl. That means I love it. My classic this week.
Now, yours surprises me, because I surprised you didn't pick another album from them.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, my classic this week is the 1991 album, Like an Ever-Flowing Stream from Dismember. These guys are a Swedish brutal death metal band, and I just happened to listen to this album. I was going through sort of a mental list of albums that I want to get on vinyl, and Like an Ever-Flowing Stream is considered a classic of Dismember. So I was listening to it again, and I was surprised. I mean, I've listened to Dismember before plenty of times, but listening to this album, I did a double take. I was like, singer sounds so much like LG Petrov from Entombed. I was like, wow. I like literally had to go and check. I'm like, he wasn't in this band, was he? And no, it wasn't. But that just really kind of turned me on. I was like, wow, this reminds me of Entombed, even though this album came out in 1991 and I didn't hear Entombed until 94, I think. It was a very similar sound, perhaps a little bit heavier. It was very good.
Now, in lists for like greatest metal albums of all time or death metal albums, and I told you I was surprised you picked this, I've seen Massive Killing Capacity on the list.
I don't see that one nearly as much.
Okay. Okay.
I have that. That's the one with like the Robotech.
Yeah, Robotech on the front. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen it on some lists.
Okay.
But I hear about this album a lot more.
Okay.
So, anywho.
I would check that out. I haven't given that much of a listen.
Yeah, it's been a little while. That's why I was sort of like, I need to go back and revisit these guys because I just, they broke up and so I haven't listened to them in a while.
Have their members gone on to do anything else that you can think of?
Not off the top of my head. They probably have, but.
Yeah.
All right. Well, geez, after last week's epic episode, this feels kind of short, but here we are at the end. Anything to add?
Just that we're starting to see more fan interaction. Our, Twitter every day has been, responses, retweets, favorites. Will, you've been great. Chuck and Godless from the Metal Slugs podcast. Those guys have been wonderful. We're starting to get people talking about us on Facebook and stuff like that. So I'm going to say thanks, everybody, for that.
Yeah, you're our social butterfly. I'm the antisocial one. I'm here I am knocking on Jason Newsted, and I'm not I'm on social media, but I'm not real good with it. So so everybody talks to you, and nobody really talks to me. But hey, whatever. It's cool. But if you want, you can check us out on Facebook, the Metal Disciple Facebook page. We're on YouTube, Stitcher. There's always wearemetalheads.com. You can stream all the episodes from there. And of course, you can download and subscribe to them on iTunes. You can also write us, let us know how much you hate us, how much you like Buke, how much you hate me. Or vice versa.
Yeah, or vice versa if I annoy you. If my lack of intelligence like George stops me from describing music as good as him, let me know about it.
My lack of personality. I may have the metal knowledge, but I have no personality. I'm really a sociopath. I'm going to kill you and eat you. I'm editing all of this out. All right. Well, that's it for this week. So let's play you another song from Take Over and Destroy. We'll be back next time. This is Terminal Burrowing. Check it out.
See ya.